Ukraine takes a giant step toward European Union membership.
We deserve it, and we deserve it not only for our bravery and our fight for freedom.
Plus, concern grows in eastern Ukraine as Russian forces advance.
Severodonetsk is still not captured by Russian forces in full. They control most of the city.
And later in the program, hop aboard a special train taking Ukraine's wounded to relative safety. Today is Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Reddish, in for Steve Miller. As Russian forces close in on a key city in eastern Ukraine, the country is looking westward for its future as the European Union inches closer to bringing Ukraine into its fold, granting candidate status to Ukraine and Moldova, another former Soviet republic. Going from candidate status to full membership may take years to achieve. Our Henry Ridgewell gives us some insight about the process and possibilities for Ukraine's future.
On the eve of the European Union summit, Ukraine's president addressed a crowd in Amsterdam via video link Wednesday, telling them the EU must approve his country's membership.
And I'm sure that none of us, none of you, have any doubt that Ukraine should get a positive decision. We deserve it, and we deserve it not only for our bravery and our fight for freedom.
That fight rages on in Ukraine's eastern Donbas region. Ukrainian forces are clinging on to their last strongholds in Severodonetsk. Outgunned and outnumbered by the Russian invaders, they are desperate for more Western help. European Union heads of state will discuss further military support for Ukraine. The 27 leaders are expected to grant the country accession candidate status, putting it on the path to full EU membership. Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz.
Ukraine belongs to us. It belongs to the European family.
For Ukraine, the benefits of joining the EU are clear, says analyst Camino Mortera Martinez of the Centre for European Reform in Brussels.
There's a huge single market, there's a number of institutions and organizations that can help, there is money to be had, but especially for Ukraine, I think that right now the most important thing would be to sort of have this silence they belong to a group of countries who are able and willing to stand up to Russia.
Throughout the 4 months of conflict, Ukraine's president has courted European leaders with a message that Ukrainians deserve EU membership in return for defending Europe from Russia's aggression. But full membership remains a long way off. Again, Mortera Martinez.
It can take 10 years or more. It goes by chapters. So every big chunks of policies are what the Commission calls a chapter. So it takes a lot of negotiation to close the chapter, so to have those negotiations over. And it would imply a lot of reforms on the part of Ukraine.
Speaking to VOA, the United States ambassador to Russia, John J. Sullivan, backed Ukraine's EU membership.
We support the Ukrainian aspirations to join, and it's tragic that Russia is pushing, at the point of a gun, Ukraine closer to the West.
Meanwhile, Ukraine has warned that Russia will intensify attacks in the coming days as the country seeks to sever ties with its eastern neighbor and forge a new European future. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Optimism about being welcomed by the European Union is blunted by news from the battlefield in eastern Ukraine. Lysychansk is the last major city in the Luhansk region that is still in Ukrainian control, and that may be ending soon. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
Russia is focusing firepower to seize two villages in East Ukraine. Britain and Ukrainian military officials say Russia has expanded its grab of territory in the east, capturing two villages and vying for control of a key highway in an offensive that could cut supply lines and encircle some frontline Ukrainian forces. In addition, Russian forces are trying to capture areas outside Severodonetsk, the administrative centre of the Luhansk region. Now, Ukrainian forces have withdrawn from some of the areas near the city of Lysychansk to avoid the possibility of being encircled. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The situation in Lysychansk and neighbouring Severodonetsk demonstrates Ukraine's need for more weaponry and ammunition to try to keep Russian forces from taking more territory. I spoke with reporter Anna Chernikova about the battlefield conditions and the arrival of a new rocket system from the United States.
Severodonetsk is still not captured by Russian forces in full. They control most of the city. The fightings are happening in the industrial area already. So Ukrainian forces still control the industrial area, but according to the latest information, the fightings are going on in there as well. So we can say that, of course, the situation, you know, is changing very fast, and by the end of the day, we can have some, you know, new updates. But for the moment, we know that Ukrainians still control industrial area, but Russians are actually getting very close, and fightings are happening right now. In terms of Lysychansk, this town is located a little bit higher in terms of the landscape. So Ukrainian forces are located there, and basically they protect Severodonetsk from Lysychansk as well, because in terms of this, you know, landscape, it's a good point for Ukrainian forces to look down at the Russians from Lysychansk. But we get information that Russians are also getting close, and they are trying to capture Lysychansk, because this is basically their goal. What we're hearing is that Severodonetsk and apparently Lysychansk, because you know, the talks are about Luhansk in administrative border. We are hearing that Russian forces have a task to capture both of the cities and to get to the administrative border by June 26. Again, this is not official, you know, confirmed information or report, but this is what military is hearing from the talks of the Russian forces. So, in terms of Lysychansk, the only information, confirmed information that we have so far is that heavy fightings are getting closer and closer to the city itself. The city is constantly under the artillery attacks, and a lot of rockets are reaching the city. A lot of infrastructure is damaged and destroyed, and a lot of civilian infrastructure as well, and civilian areas as well. So unfortunately, Lysychansk is just following the destiny of Severodonetsk. At least this is what we can see for the moment, that Russians just destroy the city itself, and they just, you know, just make it, you know, disappear as a city. So they just capture the territory. This is what we have so far.
Is there any other places that are under Russian attack elsewhere in Ukraine?
In general, Ukrainian government announced at the beginning of this week that Ukrainians should be very careful for the next week and even couple of weeks, because there is a high alert in terms of missile attacks in every region. So basically, Ukrainian authorities are asking civilians to be very attentive to the air raid sirens and to be serious about them, pay attention and go to the shelters, because in every region, the missile could strike. And this is what we have. So during the week, it's very, you know, it's very widened areas of attacks in terms of Russian rockets. So today, for instance, we experienced a massive missile attack on Mykolaiv and Odessa region. Three rockets were launched on Mykolaiv region and reached, unfortunately, Mykolaiv region. So what we know that that certain civilian infrastructure was destroyed and damaged, really heavily damaged, and also the production infrastructure structure of the city. We know that one person was injured. This is for the moment. And well, we also know that the missile strike was from the territory of occupied Kherson region. Also, Ukrainian air defense shot down two more Russian cruise missiles in the sky over Odessa region. A couple of days before, a similar situation was happening in Kharkiv. So basically, the whole territory of Ukraine is under a great risk at the moment.
What can you tell us about the American missile systems that have been promised? We're hearing that that they're either reaching Ukraine or about to reach Ukraine. Can you give us an update on where that stands?
Yeah, so we know that for the past weeks, Ukrainian soldiers, Ukrainian army was preparing and was getting, you know, ready to use the HIMARS systems. And we know that there were a number of Ukrainian military servicemen that that had these trainings. Today, the Minister of Defense of Ukraine, Alexei Reznikov, announced that first American HIMARS systems are already arrived to Ukraine and they are already in action. I would quote him as he said that HIMARS have arrived to Ukraine. He thanked to the U.S. side for these powerful tools, and quote, he said, "Summer will be hot for Russian occupiers, and the last one for some of them." End of quote. So this is basically the confirmations that we have so far. According to Ukrainian officials, more equipment should come to Ukraine soon as well. So we're just waiting because what we're hearing is that end of June and middle of July should be, you know, this period when quite a big amount of help of this supplies should arrive.
That was Anna Chernikova reporting from Kyiv. Germany is preparing for possible fuel rationing as Russia reduces its gas flow to Western Europe. High gasoline prices in the U.S. has prompted President Biden to ask Congress to suspend a federal tax on gasoline through the summer. More from VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell.
President Joe Biden says he gets it, that no one likes to spend more for essentials like fuel and food, but that painful price hikes are an inevitable result of a brutal conflict on the other side of the world, Russian President Vladimir Putin's ongoing assault on Ukraine.
We cut off Russian oil into the United States, and our partners in Europe did the same, knowing that we would see higher gas prices. We could have turned a blind eye to Putin's murderous ways. The price of gas wouldn't have spiked the way it has. I believe that would have been wrong.
Gas prices have risen globally amid the conflict, due in part to tough sanctions on Russian oil and goods, and the global pandemic, which has disrupted supply chains and productivity. Biden will meet with Saudi Arabian leaders in July in an effort to persuade the global oil cartel to increase supply. And domestically, he's calling for Congress to suspend the federal gas tax and for states to suspend their fuel taxes. His Republican opponents say they oppose it. Republican Senator John Thune.
What the administration, of course, is coming up with is yet another gimmick, another Band-Aid, and something they know is dead on arrival up here in Congress.
Putin also doesn't appear to be backing down.
We are proud that during the special military operation, our fighters act with courage, professionalism, like real heroes. Russian soldiers of different nationalities fight shoulder to shoulder. In this unit, in the faith of correctness of their cause, in the enormous popular support which our soldiers feel, lies the great invincible force of Russia.
Analysts say Biden's focus on the war's economic impacts is critical to maintain public support. Kathleen McInnes is a senior fellow and director of the Smart Women, Smart Power Initiative at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
It makes a lot of sense that Biden is focusing on the Putin price hike. It's because as the war progresses, we're seeing it impact different NATO economies in different ways, right? And the price hikes at the gas pumps here in the United States is one key way. Well, how do you keep support for a war? How do you keep allied publics on board as the war grinds on and people are starting to feel it in different ways and feel it in their pocketbooks? That's a big challenge for NATO and the United States.
The White House says higher prices aren't the only casualty of war. Russia is also blocking exports of Ukrainian grain, causing shocks around the world as far away as Africa. That is likely to be a topic when leaders of the world's seven wealthiest nations meet next week in Germany. John Kirby is coordinator for strategic communications at the National Security Council.
President Putin is, no kidding, weaponizing food. Let's just call it what it is. He's weaponizing food. He's got an essential blockade there in the Black Sea so that nothing can leave by sea. And that's, of course, how Ukraine has historically gotten its grain to markets. And so the president's working with leaders around the world to see if there's other overland ways we can do that.
Ukraine's president says this support makes a difference as the nation continues to fight against Russian forces. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
The lives of thousands of people depend directly on the speed of our partners, on the speed of how they implement their decisions to help Ukraine.
But as this war grinds into a fifth month, who pays the highest price of all? Ordinary people. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Reddish. Ukraine will be on the agenda when President Biden meets with leaders of the Group of Seven Nations starting Sunday in Germany's Bavarian Alps. Then it's on to Madrid for the annual NATO summit. Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said his goals for the meeting include agreeing on a new strategic concept and bolstering support for Ukraine and other at-risk nations. VOA Russian service reporter Rafael Sakov asked U.S. Ambassador to Russia, John Sullivan, about whether the unity shown so far by Western nations will continue.
You know, people have been asking me this question for 6 months, and at every turn, the United States and its allies and partners have shown remarkable unity. I am confident that will be the outcome both of the G7 meeting and of the NATO leaders' summit. It has been a mistake that the Russian government and President Putin made, underestimating the unity of a NATO alliance, of the United States and our EU partners. That was a mistake, because we are unified and we will resist this aggression.
About some European Union disputes about the Russian gas supplies that has long been one of the EU's greatest fear.
Yeah.
What do you think? Can it be a problem for others?
Absolutely. But it's a short-term problem that we collectively will overcome. And we won't make the mistake of being over-reliant on such an unreliable, aggressive, and hostile country like Russia.
And my last question, Ambassador. So it seems like Russia is more and more, through their propagandistic channels inside the country, showing that it's not a war against Ukraine, but it's war against the U.S., against NATO, against the West. What do you think about this? Do you think Russian people, from what you see, get this narrative, are eager to receive this narrative?
Yeah, well, you know, it's difficult. I've heard many Russians here in the United States whom I know have talked to about this, and it's... You will know this, having spent as long as you have in Russia and in Moscow. If that's the only news you hear, at some point it starts to seep in, and that's all they hear. And it's difficult for alternative points of view to become well known. But there is an underlying sense I believe, in Russia that something's wrong. And what's happening in Ukraine is wrong. They support their country. They love their military. But something's not right. And they know it. And you can sense this lurking. People want to know, when is it going to stop? when is it going to go back to being the way it was? And my message is, unfortunately, it's not going to be anytime soon.
Doctors Without Borders has teamed up with Ukrainian Railways to launch a special medical train that transports wounded patients from eastern Ukraine to hospitals in western Ukraine. Omayan Astudiliak has the story from Lviv.
Sviatoslav Rychkov and Igor Bilansky, both from the Donbas region of Ukraine, met in a hospital ward in Lviv. The two were wounded in eastern Ukraine during shelling. Both miraculously survived.
His hand is bad, barely works, but he's okay now. He can already play his favorite online games.
Olena Rychkova is a nurse from the eastern town of Lysychansk, but right now she isn't working. Her hospital has been closed for a long time because of constant shelling in the Luhansk region. In Lviv, surgeons extracted a fragment of Russian missile from the right lung of her 17-year-old son.
It looks like a bent bullet.
Svetoslav survived thanks to a timely evacuation via special medical train, a project launched by Ukrainian Railways, together with Doctors Without Borders.
Here in this room, we have our 7 oxygen generators. It's the oxygen plant, like the one that you would have in any hospital.
Yasser Kamaluddin, an Egyptian, has been working for Doctors Without Borders for a decade, but this is his first medical train.
Here in Ukraine, the railway network is vast. It covers almost all of the country, and it's still functional, even with the different attacks on railway infrastructure, the damage of some of the railway infrastructure. It's still functional to a great extent. This was a way of working that was developed specifically for the context in Ukraine, because on this train, we can take up to 30 patients hospitalized. We have 5 intensive care unit beds with the ability to keep 2 patients on full mechanical ventilation.
Natalia Kinyu from Uzhgorod says this train is a mix of an ambulance, a hospital, and intensive care unit.
What I like about our train is that we can pick up whole families or a family with friends. We can take them all out at once.
The story of another medical trained patient, Anastasia Prigoda from Popasna, spread around the world. The badly wounded 14-year-old drew 4 injured adults 30 kilometers to safety through Russian shelling. She also managed to pass a mined part of the road at high speed.
The driver's seat was somehow too high. It was high for me. My feet barely reached the panels. But I was lucky that it was high. That's how I saw those mines.
The train has managed to evacuate more than 650 patients. Doctors Without Borders says the train will continue to run as long as it is possible. Omeliano Shudlyak for VOA News, Lviv, Ukraine.
That's going to do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com and on our social media platforms. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Reddish. Good night.
Washington, D.C.